welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and it is the end of March 2013 as I record this, and it's still freezing in England. This is one of those times when after sort of five or even six months of cold, I am wondering about the sensibility of moving from Brisbane, Australia to the Northern Hemisphere. But no, I love being in London, it's awesome, but yeah, it's getting a little chilly. So this is exciting episode number 152, and I've also updated the intro and the outro, which is exciting since I haven't done that since I started the podcast back in 2009 or something, so that's quite cool. Today I'm interviewing Jane Dixon Smith, who is my interior designer for my arcane novels. We're talking about important graphic design elements for authors and interior formatting, and we even get excited about fonts and typography, which is quite unusual for me. But actually, I seem to be getting more into the physical book stuff. I actually spent last Friday night at a book art studio making physically bookbinding and making a little travel notebook. And if you're interested, I've put the video up on the blog, a little time-lapse video, which is quite cool. So if you're into bookbinding, check that out. But I'm definitely going to have a look at paper making and some other things. And one of my goals, like not now, but, you know, give me a couple of years, I do want to do some limited edition handmade books, so that will happen. But first, before the interview, a few updates. One thing I have just found out about and is very exciting and I wanted to tell you all about is that Kobo, and I hope you all know about Kobo. I mean, I've interviewed Mark Lefebvre on the show, and you know, I love Kobo. They are a fantastic alternative to Amazon. As an author, you don't need to have an alternative. You can be on, you know, multiple sites, but they're far more personal and author focused, I think, than say Apple or Nook, and they have some awesome marketing ideas, and they're innovative and responsive, and increasingly I'm getting, you know, my bills are paid by Amazon and Kobo and none of the others, I'm definitely a fan. But what you can do, and what, you know, one thing many of us struggle with is getting reviews on those other sites, and you know, a lot of the time we focus on getting reviews on Amazon because that's where we make most of our income, and where at the moment the majority of the readers are. So I've got about 90 plus reviews on Pentecost on Amazon, but I only had about 5, I think, on Kobo. But what you can do is actually link Goodreads to Kobo, which is just fantastic. So now I've got sort of 200 reviews on Kobo because it's linked from Goodreads. Now I'm going to link to a tutorial in the show notes so you can go and check that out. But essentially you just add the Kobo ISBN into the ISBN 13 field on the back end of Goodreads, where you upload your book, and that took about 5 days for me, the reviews appear on Goodreads, which is awesome. So that's really exciting. I hope that helps some people. It certainly helped me. So that's cool. Other news, talking about the UK, I seem to be involved in this major shift that is happening in England. I mean, I really think that England has been at least 18 months behind the US in terms of attitude, and the UK still has quite a, I would say, snobbish attitude towards self-publishing, up until it seems the last few months when everything's changing. And this sort of came home to me on Sunday. Last Sunday I did a keynote speech for The Guardian, which is has been my newspaper and my media of choice for many years, and sort of represents quality media in the UK. And they actually did a day on self-publishing. And so I was really excited to speak there, because I had sat there years before thinking, the day The Guardian, you know, sort of a pro self-publishing, is the day the stigma has disappeared. So that's exciting. And I mean, I'm also speaking at the London Book Fair, so they're letting independent authors speak, as well as for the Writers and Artists Yearbook coming up in association with Psychology's magazine. So I see all of this as sort of, you know, a real change in the industry, you know, where big brands, sort of big publishing brands, are embracing self-publishing and indie authors. So that's exciting. And if you are in London for the book fair, which is the 15th to the 17th of April, I'll be there. My friend CJ Lyons, New York Times bestselling author, will be there. We're having a birthday party for the Alliance of Independent Authors, and a whole load of us will be around at the Authors Lounge. So if you are around, you know, there'll have to be a tweet up, I think. And yeah, definitely see you there. Some other news. I'm very excited about an opportunity which I can't tell you about yet. Now, this is really rude, because I'm going to say it's so exciting, and you'll have to listen next time when I can actually announce it, because it's not public yet. But no, I haven't signed a 7-figure book deal. Unfortunately, but I have been commissioned to write some short stories. I can't say much more, but it's more exciting than it sounds. And yeah, I will come back to that next time. But that has, it's got some quite hard deadlines. So it's thrown a spanner in the works for my rewrites of Desecration, which are on hold while I finish these short stories, and also my arcane novella, which is set in Budapest, which will be called Relic, and is about, it's going to be based on the rise of kind of right-wing politics, and you know, action, another adventure, action adventure thriller, but amazingly sort of prescient by real things that are happening at the moment in Hungary. So I want to get back to those projects, but I have to finish these things first. So I also, you know, I've said on the podcast before that this year I've got a schedule on my wall, and every day I've got this output, and I'm really kind of forcing my creativity, which sounds like a bad thing, but it's totally not. I feel like doing, you know, making my word count into something that's a habit is actually making me more creative. Like, stories just seem to be jumping out at me everywhere, and I'm very into writing fiction right now. It's just, I'm having a brilliant time. So if anyone else has been trying that, I hope that's helping you too. But since January the 1st, when I made that decision, you know, turning pro, as Stephen Pressfield puts it, things have really taken off for me. So that's exciting. Okay, so I think that's about it for now. I'm brimming over with excitement, as you can tell. So much is happening, and so much more to come. I think it's just a brilliant time for independent authors and authors in general. It really is. Just new things are happening every day. So I hope you are also excited about life right now. Okay, so today's podcast is sponsored by author J.A. Huss and her book Clutch. You can find out more if you're interested in sponsoring the podcast at thecreativepen.com /sponsor podcast. So here is J.A. Huss and Clutch, and then we will have the interview with Jane.
Who is Junko, you ask? Picture yourself lost in your own head, confused, surrounded by people who want to use you, take you away, or simply kill you. This is me, Junko Coot, age 19, year 2152. I am the daughter of the Royal Republic's ranking commander, trained assassin, semi-famous athlete, and on the run. Behind me is a past better left dead, and in front of me is a future I'd rather not meet, because my life is nothing but lies. So who is Junko? Let's just be clear on what I'm not. I am no one's project. I am no one's redemption. and I am no one's salvation. I'm a whole lot of things, and none of them are good. But it's not my fault, because they made me this way. And now, they want to change the rules. But I've got other plans. Because I am just Junko, and I will not go down without a fight. Clutch. I am just Junko. Dark, gritty, new adult science fiction by J.A. Huss.
Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I'm here with J.D. Smith. Jane is a graphic designer, author of historical fiction, and editor of Words with Jam. Jane has also done a fantastic job of doing the interior design of my own print editions of the Arcane series, so I wanted to talk to Jane all about design. So welcome to the show, Jane.
Hi, Joanna.
it's great to have you sort of, you know, live in person since we've been talking on email, haven't we, so much lately?
We have, yes, but that seems to be how it is with most people these days. Very, very rarely actually speak to people in real life anymore.
That's so true. So why don't you start by telling us a bit more about you and your writing and publishing background?
Well, I've probably been writing for about 7 years now, but I haven't actually published anything myself yet. I stopped, like most people do, years ago, before kind of self-publishing really took off. And the process of it really didn't appeal to me, to be honest. But then I don't think it does for many people. So I write for myself, really. But then kind of 3.5 years ago, I started Words with Jam, the writing magazine, with a group of friends. And that's kind of really took off now. And we get a lot of interviews with established authors and also independent authors, and lots of useful tips and advice for writers. Kind of a lot of stuff that you probably publish on your blog as well. Mm. So we do get quite a lot of material through that, which is good. And that goes out every other month. So as I say, that's been going about 3.5 years. And then last year I started freelance design. So I've kind of built up quite a good portfolio of clients, which mostly ended up being writers, which is how I ended up doing so many book covers for people and formatting, because I just knew so many people that it kind of naturally progressed that way.
Mm. So your own writing sprang from working with writers?
No, I started writing before then, and that's how I got to know so many writers. And then as I got to know more people, the magazine kind of took off as an idea that quite a few of us kind of had and got together, and we decided it would be a good idea. So we did. And it's only finally now, kind of 3.5 years after starting the magazine, that I've actually thought about publishing myself. It's taken me a while. I'm slow.
No, that's fantastic. And we'll come back to your books and your writing in a minute. But you have 12 years graphic design experience. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's about 13 now.
You're very experienced in graphic design anyway. And you do covers as well as various other design elements. And I wondered if you would, you know, maybe talk a bit about that kind. What are the things that happen in your brain and some of the images of, you know, the typography and design elements that you see that authors who do words are often completely unaware of and, you know, often reflect badly on them? What are the main things that you see standing out?
There's a lot. Well, when it comes to cover design, it's a lot of it's typography. Well, it's imagery and typography, the kind of two different elements, and obviously they've got to work together. But what I find is that there'll be people who, most people don't get typography right for covers. That's the major one, even if they pick really nice imagery. And I've had a lot of people come back to me and say, I don't understand why it's working, and I really like the image, and I just don't get why it's working. And I say, well, to be honest, it's actually the typography that's wrong. The image is really, really good image. Mm-hmm. And it's not hard to find good imagery now. You know, you can buy stock imagery. You don't have to actually take it or have it taken and, you know, commissioned. You can buy it online relatively cheaply, but it's in the typography that goes onto that, or people get a bit Photoshop happy and and they shouldn't be allowed to use it because they kind of amalgamate images in a way that looks like it's been done by somebody who shouldn't be doing it. There's kind of things like colour matching, or they use filters that are very prominently used by people who are kind of playing with Photoshop rather than using it professionally, and it shows, you know, you can tell what people have done. And then with typography, people tend to just kind of stick it on and they think if they make it in a nice bright colour it'll look okay, or if they use the fanciest font they could find, then that's quite good too. But it's not, because obviously it needs to be legible, and especially with ebooks being at such a small size, they definitely need to be legible. So it needs to be quite prominent.
And I wonder, what about author websites? Because I see a lot of terrible websites too. And, you know, you say, and I think, oh, that looks terrible. But you would probably know why it looks terrible, right?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of good templates out there now. So there isn't really any reason why they should look really bad. So long as people pick a good template. But then, obviously, you do get some people who don't really, really have any taste. So they'll pick the bad one out of all these amazing new templates that all these professional graphic designers have created for website companies. They'll pick the worst. But, I mean, it's about not, obviously, cluttering your website.
Mm. That's a big one. Clutter seems to be major. And also the black background. Like, what is that?
Yeah. There's a lot of people who put... The worst thing you can do is put white body text, as in, you know, the bulk of your text, onto a white background, because it's really difficult to read. And it's fine with titles on book covers and things like that for them to go on a dark background, because it's just a few key words. But when it's long reams of text, then it makes it very, very difficult to read, even if you have it large, because you get kind of this glow effect. It's a bit like when people colour text orange on a dark background, and that gives a weird effect as well. And it hurts your eyes after a while.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, just staying on typography a minute, because it fascinates me, because like, I think the problem is there's almost, you know, because we get so fascinated with words, we lose touch with the kind of imagery. So when we do fonts in general, we just pick whatever's the most obvious one in the list of standard fonts. So how do you get to know typography and fonts and things? How do you, is there like some arcane world of fonts out there?
You do get very you get people who design, I mean, I don't, obviously don't design fonts, but there are font designers out there who still design new fonts on a daily basis, and you can buy those the same way as you can buy stock images. There's fonts that kind of are quite fancy fonts that should be strictly kept to maybe titles or single words of titles and that kind of thing. And so long as they're used carefully and minimally, it's fine. But when you're talking about the font you should use for, say, the whole of your book, it should always be something that's really quite plain. And Times is obviously the biggest one. And there's no problem with using Times to format a book. The fonts that I use are all basically very, very similar variations to kind of Times and Garamond and Caslon and fonts like that. And the point of them is that they are plain, so they're incredibly easy to read, and they're very, 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 very good on the eye, so that they're not going to hurt your eyes, and they're not going to cause anyone a headache once they've got past like the first chapter of a book. So that's kind of the point. You're not meant to notice them, really, because you're meant to be obviously reading the story instead.
But if people want to look at more interesting fonts for their books or their websites, do you know any resources or websites they can go to find out more about fonts?
There's one called Font Squirrel, which is it's actually a website for professional designers to be able to download good fonts that are free. And some of the fonts you download straight off their site, and other fonts you're led to another site somewhere else. But they tend to only list quite good fonts, as opposed to the ones that you can download in big packages, kind of 1,001 free fonts, but they're all really awful.
Yeah.
I download them for kind of $10. They tend to be quite bad. And the odd ones which used in the right place will be good. But just picking a font because it looks like it might be interesting probably isn't the best idea.
No, I asked because, and this is something I'm fascinated with, because I was in the big Waterstones in London in Piccadilly Circus, you know, the really, really big one. And I was just, I was looking for where my books would be sitting, obviously, on the shelf.
Yeah.
And I was, and I was glancing at looking at the difference between thriller and crime, have a lot of crossover. So I was looking at the covers of thriller novels versus crime novels, and I just found some really awesome fonts that I was like, wow, that looks brilliant.
Yeah, one of the leading sites for new fonts is called myfonts.com, and that's a brilliant site, and you can just spend hours on it. And I know people who aren't even interested in fonts or interested in design, and they've subscribed to their newsletter so that they can get a newsletter every week or however often it is, and that's quite good because they actually interview the people who design fonts, which is always cool. Interesting, you know, and there's a lot of people who name the fonts after themselves.
I think that's awesome. In fact, that reminds me, there was a Kickstarter that's just been funded this week, which has a font using the handwriting of Sigmund Freud.
Yeah.
The psychologist, and I was like, that's awesome. I love that people do this stuff, and it fascinates me because I don't care about it very much, and I hire people like yourself because I don't care enough to learn, but I find it so interesting that there's this world of typography.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, you know, as a designer and a creative, you can kind of, you think, oh, I could just design my own font, and you can the software you can download to be able to design your own font, so you can design each letter yourself, and then it will export it as a font, and you can load it onto your system and use it.
Wow.
I've never done that yet, but one day. Maybe.
So taking it back up a level, so why, you know, because you do physical marketing materials like bookmarks and cards and other things for authors, right? Well as websites and book covers and things like that. So why is an integrated brand for an author so important?
Well, I mean, obviously it's selling the person, and people, you know, when they're buying books and they're looking at book covers, the quality of the cover has to reflect what's inside, because that's the reader's expectation. And not fulfilling a reader's expectation is just going to disappoint them, and they won't go back and read more books. I mean, it's great if they've looked at a book and thought, oh, I'm not so sure about this because the cover looks dodgy, and then they read it and they think it's great. I mean, that's wonderful, but how many people actually pick it up in the first place to read it might not be that many. So it is important. And obviously more and more people are looking at websites and things like that to find out more about authors. And it has to kind of follow across the board that all of your elements look quality if that's what you want to portray. I mean, I don't think there's many people out there who want to say my writing's bad and so everything should look bad, you know. I think everybody wants to put on a... And it's a professional thing, isn't it? I mean, if it looks professional, it means that you're a professional and you take your writing seriously, and then people will take you seriously as well.
Yeah, I agree. And I think also that, you know, often new authors don't want to spend money on things like branding, but it can almost, spending a little bit of money can make you look bigger than you actually are. Like, looking more professional makes you look more famous, in quotes, than you are.
Yeah, I mean, if they're struggling with money and they went to a designer and said, look, this is my budget, then most designers would not say they'll do it cheap, but they would be able to advise you on the key pieces that will help you get by to start with, you know, as you're just starting up your business, as it were. Because as an author, it's a business, and it has to be seen that way if you want to make money out of it.
Mm. Right, so you've done the interior of my Arcane series, and what I particularly like showing for the video folks is the kind of the extra bits, the sort of the flame on the inside, and you know, on the chapter headings, all the extra kind of bits and bobs that you add in. That basically there's no way I would have done it myself or made it look as nice as that kind of thing.
Yeah,
so, sorry.
It would be a struggle, to be honest, to try and do that kind of thing in Word, because obviously most people format in Word, and it's I don't think I could do it in Word.
but I guess, you know, maybe you could just outline, you know, what are the specific things that you do with an interior format? Because I think that most people understand the importance of a cover design, but I don't think people understand interior formatting.
Yeah, it tends to be seen as the thing that isn't as important. Mm-hmm. And it isn't as skilled, but it is equally as important to get that right. There's a few different things. Font sizes are quite key. I mean, I've seen people who have done a too large a font size, and they've not only made the book more costly for them to produce, so they're not making any profit on it, but also, it doesn't actually need to be that size. I mean, you can open up a paperback that you've got on your shelf, choose a good one, and so long as you adhere to what they've done and you're observant as to what's been done in that book, it's quite simple to create your own paperback. Mm-hmm. It does take a lot of time, and it can be timely, and it is a lot more time efficient to get somebody else to do it who does it on a regular basis. But adding in the little features, especially in paperbacks, because you can't really do it in ebooks, and it makes paperbacks that little bit more special as well. Mm. And publishers are now apparently investing more in their paperbacks to make them a higher value product, to actually make them something that is worth buying over an ebook. And they're putting in these little features, and they're putting in embellishments, and they have always done some of these things, but I think they've realised now it's important to keep doing it, so they'll put a little bit more money into the actual production and the quality of the book. Mm. And I believe they're starting to add more special features into the end as well, which obviously doesn't have anything to do with typography, but they're putting in more features, like extra chapters or short stories by big authors in the paperback rather than the ebook, to try and get people to buy the paperback.
Oh, that's a good idea.
At least to see, you know, with them costing more, so that the reader feels like they're getting more value for their money as well.
That's a really good idea. I'm going to think about that, because I'm writing some short stories at the moment. So that's really good. And I mean, so the little images that you've added in, you know, on each page there for the audio folks, like little flames in Pentecost, and I've got little skulls in Prophecy, and a little Ark of the Covenant in Exodus, which I love. So where do you find images like that?
I just find them stock online. Some I change. Some you can read. Obviously, I redraw or tweak to make them specific to the book. But most of them, you can just find them as stock images online from high quality clip art libraries. Mm. And you can usually find whatever you need in them, because there's thousands and thousands of images out there that you can use, and they're royalty free. So,
do you have a favourite site? Because that's the problem. There's so many sites.
Yeah, it depends. For photography, I use mostly Shutterstock, iStock Photo, ThinkStock, and for cheaper images, 123 Royalty Free is a really, really good site. So it kind of depends on the budget, but also it just depends on what I'm looking for. If it's an image, you'll find some images appear on all the stock sites, depending on where the photographers decided to upload them. But for little images like that, they're actually vector images, so they can be scaled to any size without losing quality. And I get those from VectorStock, and they're really, really cheap.
Yeah, because that's when I did my own paperback a couple of years ago now, when I did things myself. You know, there was a problem with the quality, because the images weren't the 300 dpi.
Yeah, well, a lot of people, if they download them just straight offline, I think people are getting more used to the idea that there is different qualities of images, and images that are used just on websites are low resolution and low quality. But you can buy off stock sites, depending on the resolution that you want, they'll cost a little bit more. So if you only need a small file, you don't pay as much, which is quite good.
And what about, like, people often ask me, you know, I want to use my own photos in my print book.
Yes, yeah. People seem to be quite apologetic about it. They kind of say, I'm really sorry, but can I use mine? And so long as the quality is good enough, and I'm not just talking the actual size of the file, but the photograph itself, because obviously there's like bad lighting and blurriness and having dust on the lens and all sorts of things like that, which can make the image unusable, really. So it has to be good enough quality to use. But if they have one, yes, definitely, I'll use it on the inside or the outside.
But it just has to be that high quality in order to print properly, basically.
Yeah, it has to be high enough quality to print, as in the resolution, the file size, but it also has to be a good photograph.
And I also wanted to ask you, like, and it's so funny when I look at the book, you know, like, this is a one of the chapters. And so the first, like, I love the way the first four words are, you know, are in caps, which I like, which just makes it look different. But also, how do you know when the page number goes on the page and when it doesn't? So, like, I'm like, because I is it the first one of every chapter? Because, I mean, how do you even know things like that?
The rule is definitely not to have them on title pages and not to have them on blank pages. And that's one of the things that can a telltale sign that it's been done by somebody who doesn't do it all the time, is that they'll put them on the wrong pages, because it doesn't need to be on a blank page. There's no reason why anyone would try and find a blank page in a book so you wouldn't page number it.
Stuff like that is just things that, like you say, mark out an amateur. And I totally, you know, when I did it myself, it was so amateur.
it's more about knowing. So obviously this is one of the things that it's less skilled, but it's about knowing not to do it. But I don't put them on chapter heading pages either. But I also don't put headers, so your name or the book's name that goes on the top of the pages. I don't put those on the first page of each chapter either, because I see it as a title page. And some publishers do put them on and some don't. So it's kind of one of those that you either can or you can't. It doesn't really matter that much. But definitely not blank pages or your title page or your copyright page and things like that.
But this is it. There's so many finicky things. And I think that I really would advise people, like, seriously, I just don't think it's worth doing yourself if you want a professional quality book.
No, I have had people who spent a good couple of weeks trying to format their
exactly
manuscript. And it doesn't take me that long. And people don't end up pulling their hair out at the end of it either, so they've still got a good head of hair.
Yeah, and also what happens if people do it themselves, because, you know, again, I've had this experience, when you upload it to CreateSpace or one of the other sites, it will tell you, this is wrong, and this is wrong, and that's wrong, and your margins are wrong, and it's a nightmare.
And you end up with this massive list of things that you don't even understand. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But I must say, you know, as a big testimonial for you, I just upload the file and there's no problems.
Isn't it? That's good.
It is. It's brilliant. So I think paying a professional, for me as a self-publisher, it's just getting rid of the angst and the stress.
Yes. But even if there is a problem, which there are, I've had problems in the past, clients have uploaded files because obviously they're uploading them, not me, and they've had problems, but all they do is they forward the email back to me and I go, oh, just ignore it, it's fine, it's just a common warning and it won't make any difference, or I resolve the issue and send them a new file. We've had CreateSpace before now, I've sent files off to clients and they've uploaded them and it's come back with an issue that is kind of a CreateSpace glitch, and I've just resaved exactly the same file and it's uploaded fine second time round. So you know, there's stuff like that, but people have got someone to fall back on if they're using somebody who knows what they're doing.
Exactly. And we should just say on this about the design process. So whether you're doing a cover design or interior design, or that, you know, it's very much an iterative process, isn't it? You know, people should never expect to engage a professional and only have one discussion.
No, definitely not. I mean, that's why I always send people, if I'm formatting, I always send people the first few chapters so that they can see and they can make changes, because things, you know, things are a matter of taste and people should have what they want. It's for me to advise people if they try to make a decision that I think's wrong and will look awful. But other than that, there's lots of things that are just a matter of taste, or, you know, the clients want it presented in a certain way, which is absolutely fine. But I always kind of do things in stages so that they've got the option to change it, and it's not, it doesn't create any hassle for me or for them.
Mm. Yeah. No, it's great. I think people who are very brand new in this process don't really understand that it's iterative, and also the more that you work together, so the more you say, you know, like, I like this, I don't like A, I like B, I like bits of, I like this and that, of, and that's absolutely fine, isn't it? That's what you want as a designer.
Yeah, I mean, I do get people apologising, they send me emails back saying, I'm really sorry and I hope you don't think that I'm trying to tell you what to do, but and they give me feedback on covers saying, well, I like this bit and I like that bit, but I always try and say in my emails now that I send out, you know, it's fine, we can swap colours around if you prefer one colour from one design and not from the other. But, you know, it's a process. Cover designs, usually there's at least kind of 4 or 5 PDF proofs go back and forth before we finalise things, minimum normally.
Yeah, so. Exactly. And I think that will hopefully make people feel better, because, you know, I know when I started doing it, it was like, oh, am I allowed to say this or whatever?
Yeah. But
no, that's fantastic. Right. So let's get back to your fiction, because you are part of the Triskell Books author collective.
I wondered,
tell us a bit more about your fiction and tell us why you're working with Triskell Books and also what they are.
Well, as you've just said, they're an author collective. There's a group of seven people now. Mm-hmm. It was 3 to start off with, but then they engaged me to do book cover design and kind of all the branding for the group. Mm. That was this time last year. And so I've been doing that for kind of the last 12 months. And then when 2 of the girls found out that I'd almost finished my own book, which is based on the legend of Tristan and Isolde, they kind of made me publish it with them. I was about 20,000 words off, and there's nothing like a deadline to hurry you up. I've never written so fast in all the years I've been writing than I have in the last couple of months. So the benefit, though, of having the group is that, because we work so closely together, everybody critiques everybody else's work. Mm. So you've got kind of at least 3, 4, maybe 5 people who read your full manuscript and give you detailed comment and detailed line edits.
Wow.
Which you can't get. I mean, even if you employ somebody to edit your manuscript for you, you'd have to get kind of a different editor to look at structure and a different one to look at line edits and then proofreading on top. And the other benefit with this is, because there's so many different people, you get different opinions from different ones. And if you get 2 people saying the same thing, you know, you've definitely got to change it. So it's been a great process. And I've just got to the point of kind of signing up for my ISBNs and sending it off to the proofreader. So that should be going off at the end of this week.
Fantastic. But what's the book called, so everyone knows?
It's Tristan and Isolde.
Oh, right. Fantastic. Okay. Well, we'll keep an eye out for that. I'll put a link to the Triskell site. And do you also market each other's work? How does that work with the collective?
One of the main things about the collective is that we do our marketing together. So we have a website for the collective, and we have one Facebook page for the collective as well. And at the moment, we're actually doing a hot seat week. So each one of us will take a week and do the online marketing and interviews for the blog and things like that on our week, so that it kind of spreads the load a little bit. So we get a lot more marketing done. Mm. There's less kind of stress on any one person. although I'm not sure some of us would say that.
And it's, so is it, I mean, I'm sure some people are sitting there thinking now, oh, I'd like to join that. It's not an open collective, is it? It's invite only, basically.
Yes, it's pretty much invite only. I'm not altogether sure, being the newbie in the group, I'm not altogether sure how they're going to handle taking on new members. But as far as I know, it's invite only.
Yeah, and I think more the lesson for people listening is, you know, it's a possibility for other authors to join together in groups.
I've seen so many collectives popping up recently, and there's been a lot of kind of hype about it being the new way to go on, because you keep all of your own royalties. You don't pay any royalties to the collective. Obviously, there is a financial contribution from each of us to keep the website running and that kind of thing. But other than that, you're your own publisher, so you just have the benefit of being part of a group.
Mm. Although I think it's best, like, you're all literary fiction, there's a few historical fiction kind of in there, isn't it? I mean, it's not like it has to be a similar type of author, I think, that clubs together.
Yeah. I mean, we're based on time and place. A couple of the girls write crime, but it's all about the location. So kind of my book's based in Cornwall, or Curnow as it was back then, and it's in the 6th century, so it's all about time and place, so there's kind of a link there. And the styles are quite similar, they don't clash at all, so
no.
In that respect they do work. And I know a few other groups where it's, you know, a collection of romantic novelists or very literary novelists, so.
No, I think that sounds brilliant, and, you know, and I know a lot of the some of the ladies from Triskiel Books. I think it's a brilliant idea, and I wish everyone the best with that. But where can people find you and your work and your books online?
I've got my own web address for my design. And this is the problem with having so many different little businesses, is that you end up with millions of web addresses, don't you? My design web address is jdsmith-design.com, mm-hmm. And Words with Jam is wordswithjam.co.uk, and Triskiel Books is triskielbooks.co.uk as well.
Fantastic. Well, thanks ever so much for your time, Jane. That was great.
You're very welcome.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free Author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.